your interactions and your problem solvings will change over time as the child ages. They won't go away. They will change. Just keep at it and you'll be amazed with the progress.
You're changing the world one child at a time, right?
Amen.
Hello again, everyone. This is Kaz Bielan, and you're watching Casual Conversations, or you're listening on the audio podcast. And it's really great either way, but the visuals are much more pleasant because today we have a person who's very important to our world. His name is Terry Blackwell. He is a, tell me your title, because there's too much information you got out there. I want to hear from you directly because I can't remember it anymore.
Sure. The two credentials that are listed on the screen, SAS stands for School Administrative Supervisor. I am a permanently licensed school principal in the state of New York. The other credential is a licensed BCBA, which again, my predominant practice has been in the state of New York. So I'm fully licensed as a behavior analyst in the state of New York.
Well, that's a lot of licenses. I hope you have a license to drive also.
I got one of those for New Jersey.
A truck or a car?
Whatever I can get into.
Whatever we can get into. Well, it's great to have you back. We did an earlier interview with Terry, and we'll put a link up above or below, wherever it is these days, because either on the audio podcast, you can get the prior interview and also the video as well, if you like to, and video this one, because you can see how handsome Terry and I look, if you want to do that. If not, you just listen, and happy trails. Enjoy the ride, as we say, if you're driving or listening. So, Terry, today's very important subject that we need to get into is special education and the topics of available options. You know, there's most people think, I think, you know, they go to a school system and the school has to provide an education because they legally they have to. Mm-hmm. And they might think, okay, school's the only way to go. But there are options.
Well, when you say school's the only way to go, I suspect that you're talking about public school. And,
yes.
You know, and that's what you and I were kicking around. You know, this is a very challenging area to consider, especially if you're a parent of a young child who has special needs, right? There's a sense of powerlessness when you first hear that your child has fill in the blank diagnosis and you run around to your pediatrician, you run around to specialists. The expectation as a parent is that the school district is going to help you with this. It has been my experience that there are very different types of districts. There are those districts, again, in my experience, typically working middle-class districts that will give you everything they've got to help your kid. And then there are other districts, typically the wealthy districts, in my experience, that kind of size you up and try to figure out, well, you know, do these parents have the capacity to cause us grief in court? So you and I talked about options. What are options? And I always come back to, I spent a good portion of my professional career by Yankee Stadium in the South Bronx back when it was a demilitarized zone. And we ran a very, actually an award-winning preschool special education program for kids 3 to 5 years old. The neighborhood was so tough at the time, the building didn't even have windows, because if we'd had windows, we would have had no furniture. But that school was found to be, by the State Education Department of New York, one of the two best in the entire state. And our predominant parent was a single, working, limited English proficient mom. And we gave everything that we had. And I always use that as a frame of reference. What if the person who has a special needs child is that same parent, whether that be in New Jersey or in New York or Maryland or wherever? I assume that they're really doing the best that they can for their kid, because certainly our parents in the Bronx did, and that they just don't know what their rights and privileges are for their child. So today I'd like to talk a little bit about options other than public school. Basically, if you have a child who has special needs, your public school is obliged, as you started off by saying, to provide a free and appropriate public education. That's FAPE is the initials for that. Now, that gets tricky because parents, and I've met many, many parents over the course of being a BCBA who say, well, my school district just warehouses my kid. They push him from year to year and he makes no progress. You and I were talking the other day. There's a very important and fairly recent Supreme Court decision, and I'm just looking up the citation here in case parents want to look it up, because I really think it's a game changer. This is a Supreme Court decision that came down in 2017, and the case is known as Endrew versus Douglas, E-N-D-R-E-W versus Douglas. And Endrew, I believe, was the parent of a child with autism who was complaining, and I'll use the term that their son was being warehoused and pushed from year to year with no progress. And Douglas was the name of the superintendent of the local district. An important decision that I don't really think has fully taken traction yet, but basically the court looked at the parents' complaint and they said, look, it's not for us to intervene and tell the district specifically how they have to do things. But what we do know is that it was never the intent of the education law, the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Act, that a kid be warehoused. And they use a term in that finding, in their summary of the finding, that a child's program must be appropriately ambitious. And that is a really key phrase because it implies certain things. It implies that the child's program must be measurable. And if you think about education, I know you have children. How much of what they went through was actually measurable from year to year? Very little, unfortunately. This tends to lead now full circle back to the ABA, which for autism in this country is the, at least according to the Surgeon General's site, the only proven effective treatment based upon 50 years of experience. So, you know, we start to talk about what are the options for that single working mom who's got a kid my size. I'm a large human, right? So mom's 5'2", weighs 100 pounds, and she's got a 16-year-old at home who's 250 pounds with a significant disability, severe aggression, and her school district just keeps sending the kid home. What's her options? Well, I guess that the first question is, are there options? Or are you simply obliged to take what the school district gives you? The absolute answer to that question is no, you are not. Not unless, and now with the Supreme Court finding, not unless that program is appropriately ambitious.
So Terry, that's the public schools. But what about other institutions like parochial schools and other ones? Is the same, do the same rules apply for them? They have to?
No, in fact, they become alternatives to public school to the extent that parents, and I'll give you a good example. During the pandemic, well over a million children nationwide, their parents didn't want them to get the vaccine. So they pulled out of public schools and did homeschooling. Now, I'm not saying that that's the entire reason for that million kids. There were the teacher strikes and things of that nature as well. So parents really had to figure things. They had to figure out workarounds. Homeschooling is an option. Now, the issues become, where do you find qualified homeschool support? Parochial school, Catholic schools, Jewish schools, Orthodox schools. Those are all also options. The issue for a child with special ed is typically that child is going to need some highly specialized instruction, whether that's from a special education teacher, some speech pathology, perhaps physical therapy, occupational therapy, nursing. And it varies from state to state. I was very, very surprised to find out that in the state of New York, one of the former commissioners told me that were a parent to take a child out of public schools, and this happened to be in Rockland County, and place them in a parochial school, a Catholic school in this case, that the state was still obligated with the school district to provide what they call related services, the speech, the OT, the nursing, the psychology. I think you would have to look at that state by state and see what the regulations support. But there's also multiple options for a child with special education if you want to go the route that requires some legal intervention. That is a very different path.
So what path would you mean by that? There's a different path. You go to court about it, or like, what are you saying?
Well, there's something called an impartial hearing, right? Education has its own framework. So coming back to the single working mom, you know, let's say that she's got a school district that's kind of shining her on and pushing the kid through from year to year, and she's fed up with it. Well, you can always go and talk to an attorney. It doesn't cost you anything usually for the first consult. It's an expensive path in my experience. And if you think about it, it's almost a little bit like judo. The district is using your own tax dollars against you. But if parent needs to really go that path, likely the first step outside of the district is to go to what they call an impartial hearing, where the parent would present their case. This is what's going on with my kid. I don't think it's fair or appropriate. It's not measurable. Year to year, they were in second grade doing nothing. They're now in fifth grade, and I keep on hearing the same thing. He's such a nice kid, but I don't see him learning how to read. I don't see him coming anywhere near his grade level, and I don't see anybody trying to help him to do that in a way that I can quantify. There are several different places. I mean, Wright's Law was a resource that I used to use a lot when I was running special ed programs. W-R-I-G-T-H, Wright's, not R-I-G-H, Wright's Law, where you can really do a nice deep drill down on what are the rights of parents for students. If you do end up going the path of litigation, it's expensive, it's time consuming, it's emotionally draining. There are several different paths. There's something called a Carter letter decision, which is kind of cool. This is my nerd self speaking. This was from Georgia. It was not related in any regard to President Jimmy Carter or his family, but it was a parent. And I actually think the first case that used it in Jersey was down by Princeton. A parent essentially pulled their kid out of the district, placed them in a school that they thought was much more proficient and was providing a measurable outcome and challenging their son. And after a few months, they went to the court and said, look, you know, we need the district to pay this tuition, which was a lot of money. I think it was about $110,000 a year. And because they were able to provide a data set to the judge, and the school district was not from prior years able to provide anything like that, the judge found in favor of the parents, and the kid continued to go to school there at the cost of the district. There are multiple types of programs or decisions like that. But if you go in that route, my strong recommendation is you have a consultation with a qualified special ed attorney.
Parents might not be aware of everything that's available out there, and things are continually changing. And Terry's been in the education field, special education and others for many years, and he knows a lot of information and people's. A lot of it will link below the video if you're watching on YouTube or other social media. Also, audio podcasts will have some of those links that Terry mentioned to make it easier for you to find, and possibly a list of options. Now, you earlier mentioned, FAPE, but also LRE as a concept. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Keep in mind, there really are three major components to special education law. You know, I'm speaking from my perspective. A lawyer might say there's 100. The first is the more generic term FAPE, which is an assurance to parents, for students disabled or not, of a free and appropriate public education. So this is lined up with what you were speaking about in the beginning, Kaz. Mm-hmm. The second is the special education law that came into effect. I believe it's called 94-142, public law 94-142, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And that's the act that really lays out the intention of what's supposed to happen for a child with special needs in public education in the United States.
Least restrictive. Oh, the dog. The dog just ran away.
The dog ran away because he knows he's going to a special ed. The LRE is a very interesting concept. It basically says that a child should be educated in the least restrictive environment. And typically, the courts have found that is their public school classroom right around where their typically developing peers are going to school. And very often, I've encountered parents of young children who, and this is very hard, you know, parents of kids who are, let's say, 3 to 7 years old, 3 to 6 years old, want nothing more than for their kid to be a normal kid, right? I mean, that's every parent of a special needs. I want them to do the best they can. I'd really love them to approximate normal. Unfortunately, I've seen LRE used as a judo tactic against parents to say, hey, look, you know, if we put your kid in this normally, typically developing school, they're going to have access to a gym. They're going to go to lunch with their typically developing peers. They might go to assembly. The ugly part of that being that there's no child out there with autism who is going to spontaneously manifest all the skills they need to get past the spectrum disorder because they happen to sit in a lunchroom where 51% of the kids are typically developing. So very often, parents who are in a battle to try to get their child in a private approved placement. And I want to mention an association here that I sat on the board for a little while. It's called NAPSEC. It's the National Association for Private Special Education Centers, NAPSEC. And you can look them up if you're listening to this, whichever state you're in. I guarantee you there is an approved private school near you. But LRE can very often be used against a parent simply because they say, well, I really want my child to go to Ken Berger's Spectrum 360 program in Livingston, New Jersey, because they're really the best and the brightest. And the district says, well, but, you know, Ken's program is really out of the community. It's a more restrictive setting, and we disagree. And unfortunately, that tends to force parents to go the legal route through impartial hearings and things of that nature.
Now, there's a question we have on the screen. What if my child is in public school and has an IEP but are not making any progress? What are the steps to rectify some of this?
Well, I think the thing that I learned very early in my career was if you don't put it in writing, it never happened. So very often parents will make a phone call. Somebody might stop by and have a conversation at the school. Those are nice things. You always want to have a positive relationship with the people who are educating your children. But I will tell you from experience, if you do not have what your complaint is in writing in a sequence to try to resolve it, you're killing yourself. Because all of that time and all those verbal conversations will never, you know, the other side's just going to say, no, I don't recall it the same way they did.
You know, like you send me a bunch of notes in writing there, Terry. So what you're saying is true because I have it all in writing. So in case you miss something, I have it in writing. I can look it right up. But that is true. I have it in writing. I think that's a good advice in anything that you're doing, purchasing or having an agreement with someone, because that'll cause an argument later. Now, what other options are there besides homeschooling and paying for private schools? Because yeah, we talked about homeschooling, private schools.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the parochial school option. You know, this and more parents, I think, are very seriously looking at it. I heard the other day that in the state of New Jersey, the governor wants to mandate that a COVID vaccine be included as one of the vaccines for kids to go to school. And meanwhile, you had students over here at Rutgers University, law students at St. John's University, basically saying, look, this is an experimental vaccine and we don't want it. But now we're going to force it upon a six-year-old going to kindergarten. So I suspect whether you like it or not, you're going to see more people going towards homeschooling. And the thing that has changed substantially is the technology to support that move. Right now, you can access some really good curriculum relatively inexpensively. I think the one that I was aware of was the Seton curriculum online for $900 plus or minus per year for the full year. And kids were reaching academic standards that were blowing away their public school peers. I'm not a subscriber to it, but I was stunned that the price was that low. The technology allows for communication across platforms. Kids are using social media. So that whole thing has changed. The NAPSEC, the approved private schools, if there is a need, there are certainly special needs schools. I worked for many, many years with Easter Seals of the Northeast, and they had a special niche. Their original corporate name was the Society for Crippled Children, crippled no longer being a term that's used, but they were looking for kids who were severely medically handicapped. And by the nature of that specialty, they had physiatrists, they had people who were doing things that you couldn't ordinarily access in a public school setting.
So I just, like, what are some of the key things that you want parents to know caregivers of children with special needs that, like, how would you summarize what they need to know besides the public school option? Like, what are the key steps they should do to proceed to get some results that they're looking for?
Well, I think it starts with making the assumption that as a parent or a guardian or a caregiver, you have an obligation to be awake and to hold your district or your program, whatever, to hold them accountable. And what does that mean? Don't make the assumption that simply because you're paying a lot of taxes and sending your kid to a Blue Ribbon school district, if your kid is a Blue Ribbon school district special ed kid, I've actually seen it work the other way for those kids, where they kind of drag down the local test scores, and so they get treated very differently. So accountability is game one. Putting things in writing, and I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. I think that emails can work, but I also know that, because I've used it, that certified letters, the old-fashioned United States Postal Service, whatever it costs now, $3 or $4, send it certified receipt, return requested. It gets a very clear message across the people that you're dealing with that you're serious. And the accountability and also the measurable progress. You know, a guy who became a friend of mine over here, Dr. Thomas Mazzarelli, once asked me a very, very hard question. He said, I want you, and at the time, I think my oldest son was maybe 12 or 13. He says, I want you to try to put yourself in a position 15 years from now Ask yourself these questions. What is your son doing? Who are his friends? Where does he live? What does he do for enjoyment? What are his hobbies? Who does he associate with? What are his special interests? And, you know, that's a very difficult question that amounts to the question, what does your child's education look like when it's done? And where do you want them to land? And if the progress that you're seeing doesn't take you towards that goal, do something about it. Don't sit and wait for somebody and expect altruism from the education system, because more than likely it's not going to happen.
I mean, so what are the things you can do? I mean, we talked about private school and everything. What about the time in between the regular school year while the child is still in school? Like, what are the resources for that to help them so they don't lose what they've learned, you know, throughout the school year?
Yeah, that's a really good question now that we're coming up on summer. In educational language, because everybody's got to have their own language, that's called the extended school year, right? So a legal school calendar has to be 180 days. Who came up with it? I don't know, but that's the number, 180 days. You don't hit 180 days, you don't have a legal school calendar, all sorts of problems happen. The extended school year is different lengths in different states, but I'm going to defer to New York because of my experiences in New York. In New York, an extended school year was basically 6 weeks of 5 days a week. In New Jersey, I believe it is 4 weeks, 4 hour days. Where this gets interesting to me as a clinical person is that the test is that the child being out of school, let's say your son or daughter graduates the first week in June. So now they're pretty much not in school June, not in school July, not in school August, 3 months. Well, during that 3 months, will your son or daughter regress more than 50% of that time? Meaning, when they come back, they will have lost at least half of that time in their educational value or educational levels. The challenge is now, it used to be when I first got into the field, pretty much most kids got the extended school year. It was just that's the way it worked. Now parents have to fight for the extended school year. And as I pointed out in New Jersey, it's only really 4 hour days for 4 weeks. There is, in my experience, no test that can be used that can demonstrate the loss of a month and a half. So it becomes a real wrestling match. I do think that there are some resources that parents can use that are available online to support some of their kids' educational goals. For a while, I worked in New York State up by Albany, New York, a place called Colony, New York, as a administrator of a school without walls that we actually operated on the Mohawk River. And what we sought to do was to integrate educational objectives into things like swimming, hiking, gross motor physical, things that were fun for the kids, right? It was quite a battle. You know, looking back on that, I think we might have been accidentally ahead of our time, but our thinking was that, you know, kids deserve to have a fun time too when they're out and a break, but that doesn't mean that they can't be learning. It just requires additional creativity, how to take that individualized education plan and make it normalized or generalized.
So we've talked about, I guess, for the most part, elementary through high school age kids. Now, what happens, because I know there's a certain age out of the system where the kids, even in high school, I think go up to 19 or whatever age. But is there anything in there for parents who kids who want to go maybe or are able to go to somewhat of a trade school or, you know, some other educational institutions after that? Like, what resources are out there for them? Because suddenly school's over, high school graduation, yee-hee, wah, everybody's happy. And then next day, what do we do?
It's a great question. And it's a national tragedy, cause. I think that back when I was teaching at Seton Hall Graduate School, we did a study on what happens to the kids who graduate from special needs programs. And the sad fact was that we came back to, and I'm going to round this off because the study was a long time ago, but it was St. Peter's College. It was William Patterson College in Seton Hall. And the research indicated that less than 1 in 10 children graduating from an IEP were working for more than a year in some minimum wage job. And even among that 10%, many of them fell off. There is a national program, let me back up a little bit because you mentioned the age 19. The actual age that typically children age out of school is 18 years old, although under severity, issues of severe conditions or parental advocacy, that can be stretched to the age of 21. Mm-hmm. When the child graduates school, the phrase, I've also spent a lot of time in the adult services The phrase falling off the cliff is a national phrase, and everybody knows what it means. That means your kid no longer has the funding that's attached to education, and good luck if you can get anything. That's sad, because there are programs that I wasn't aware of for many years of my career. I'm going to mention one, the Ability One program, which currently provides about 70,000 jobs across the United States to people with special needs. And the requirement is that the person must be, quote, disabled for the work. And what that means is that if the person didn't have some special accommodations, likely they would not be working. These are jobs that pay well above minimum wage, have excellent benefits, and quite honestly, that every special ed director in the country should be aware of, because there is an agency somewhere near you that has a contract. The agency that I ran for the past 6 years, we had over $100 million of contracts with places like the Pentagon, Andrews Air Force Base, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the Interior Department building, the Clinton building. And these provided jobs to, in our case, almost 950 people who had disabilities, the majority of which were intellectual and developmental disabilities like autism.
We're recording this June 2023, so I'm sure there'll be more options and availabilities coming after that, but that's the timeline that you got to keep in mind, whether you're watching us or listening to other podcasts, Casual Conversations. So, Terry, I know you've been on the program before, and this is the last time you had a tough time answering this question, so I got to ask it again because I ask everyone. What's it like being a guest on Casual Conversations again, Terry?
I love the dog background.
Good sound effect.
It's very natural. You reminded me actually to speak to one last point. There was an attorney here in New Jersey who is, depending upon which side of the aisle you're on, if you're a parent, he's great. And if you're a special ed administrator, he makes you want to throw up. But he is a parent himself of a severely disabled young, I guess she's a girl, probably about 7 or 8 at this point, that he adopted. He knew she had spina bifida. He adopted her. So he's a very aggressive advocate. And he was the one that pointed out to me a long time ago. He said, you know, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, inherent in the law, says that the results that you obtain in the school must generalize to the community in which the person lives. And that's, if you think about that, that is so important. It makes no difference if the kid can count to 5 and name all the colors in the book if they can't identify a policeman when they get lost in community. And so I'll leave you with that last thought.
Yeah, well, how to contact a person that they know, you know, for help in case they get dislocated, you know, somewhere else in town or disoriented, like some way to contact. That's sort of important information that you need to pass on. Otherwise, you know, people are looking for them and it doesn't, you know, might not turn out well. So, well, thank you very much. Amazing information. Incredible. Terry, as usual, hope to have you back here on Casual Conversations. And any final quote you want to give to us?
No, I think we've covered a lot of turf, Kaz, but I do have one quote. A friend who has an adopted daughter who has autism, and she approached me because she was going through a very hard time. And her name is Crystal. So if she ends up listening to this, what I told Crystal was, I said, your interactions and your problem solvings will change over time as the child ages. They won't go away. They will change. Just keep at it, and you'll be amazed with progress.
You're changing the world one child at a time, right?
Amen.
That's how it goes. Thanks again. See you around. See you soon.